Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and I apologize for my last episode. I hate it when I get in a rush, and I've expressed this before. Whenever I'm trying to get other things done and juggling stuff and so forth, not just me, we all tend to do this. We all tend to start making mistakes, and we're using bad language, bad grammar, bad English, blah. And so I was guilty of bad grammar. Anyway, because there's a lot more to still go through, and we're getting into some really, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to George Washington's farewell address, we're really getting into the meat of it as we go through more and more. He starts off with his explanation of, why he did not, continue to be the president and wanting to retire and so forth. And he set the tone that had been honored for a long time, because we had humble public servants for a while. It wasn't until later, when we started getting despotic presidents around Lincoln's time frame or a little before then, and getting to arrogant presidents like FDR, Obama, and so forth. And so, the presidents that have come since the progressive era do not understand the bedrock that this nation, this republic, was built upon. That's why we need to go through these founding documents. Not necessarily with a fine-tooth comb. Good on you if that's what you want to do. And I encourage it. But I'm here to tell you that all you need to do is just, and I don't want to say graze, but we need to kind of go through these things in a good, full fashion, so you at least understand in context what we were given by the divine hand of providence when our framers created this Constitutional Republic. This show was also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And when we get straight to it, that means we've got a lot to cover. So I'm going to try not to rush. I'm going to try not to use bad grammar. And I'm going to try to be cool and collective. But the cool part about this entire show is that you don't have to stream. You can actually call and listen in. 605-562-4209. I can't think, that you may have a lot of things going on. As a matter of fact, case in point, there are, people that are really upset with the mayor in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and they're, trying to unseat and get this person to resign, Mayor Orr, I believe. Long story short, I know that there are all sorts of really important things you're engaging, just like they are in Cheyenne. The fact of the matter is, this 1 hour a day in going through the foundation of this Constitutional Republic, going through these documents, it's your opportunity to read the scripture of government. Because as a good Christian reads their scriptures, they have an understanding of what the doctrines are that they're supposed to be supporting. And that's how they can recognize the perverted doctrine of their government, of their, more specifically, their religion. And in context to our founding documents, this is how you, my friends, can learn and understand how perverted our government has become. We are still covering the George Washington farewell address. And so let's just jump in. But before I do, have to say two more things. Because see, that's what happens when I get in a hurry. I forget to do something or something else. What we want to cover are the Tory Acts, which are, to me, a good establishment as to what we need to do when we finally take back and get control of our constitutional republic, to where we start getting compliance and our public servants begin serving us, the next question we really need to beg is, what do we do with those deniers and those who are hardcore enemies of our constitutional republic? There's no point in letting them stay here. There is no point in letting them bask in our experiment of liberty that is continuing into the third century, fourth, and so forth. I believe what needs to be done is, I believe we need to give them a choice as to where they go. But let's look at what the Tory Act stated and how they, the framers of the Continental Congress, kind of drew up these acts in response to those who were sympathizing and those who were supporting as loyalists of Britain, which had all of a sudden become the enemy, the evil of the day. So with that, we also want to, invite you to consider the final thing I want to cover. We also want to invite you to consider getting a pound and or a bag. I think it's 12 ounces, but it's a bag of Red State coffee. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. Right there on the homepage, you can click on, because this is our only sponsor, you can click on that link. It'll take you to eBay, and you can buy a bag from the supplier of, I think it's Patriot Coffee or what have you, but they're the ones that are making the Red State coffee. This is a premium coffee. We would invite you to try it. Just buy one. Call us. Let us know what you think. 425-270-5416. We believe it's good enough to where you will call and say, absolutely, this is great coffee. It may be a little expensive, but every cup is worth the money, right? Or, I mean, if it's bitter or what have you, again, I don't drink coffee, but I understand it can be bitter. I understand it can acidic, whatever. If you don't like it, let us know. Because if so, we need sponsorships, but we don't want to promote a product that is taking advantage of the customer or is not what it bills itself to be. So please, by all means, give us the feedback, and we would greatly appreciate that. So moving forward, now we can actually dive into paragraph 19. And thank you for forgiving me by tuning in and continuing on this, I'll just call it the lesson from our first president and one of our framers, George Washington. We're in paragraph 19. And so, and this is where, he starts talking about the party again, and he starts talking about the consequences of the party and so forth. And he says this: towards the preservation of your government and the permanency of your present happy state, it is requisite not only that you steadily discountenance irregular oppositions to its acknowledged authority, but also that you resist with care the spirit of innovation, its principles, however specious the pretext. One method of assault may be to effect in the forms of the Constitution alterations which will impair the energy of the system, and thus to undermine what cannot be directly overthrown. Now, what he's talking about is alterations that may take away the concept of a limited form of government. Well, folks, we don't have any alterations like that. They've just been ignoring the fact that they are limited and just telling us that they can do whatever they want to do. He goes on and says, in all the changes to which you may be invited, remember that time and habit are at least as necessary to fix the true character of governments as of the human institutions, that experience is the surest standard by which to test the real tendency of the existing constitution of a country, that facility in changes upon the credit of mere hypothesis and opinion exposes to perpetual change from the endless variety of hypothesis and opinion, And remember, especially, that for the efficient management of your common interests in a country so extensive as ours, a government as much vigor as consistent with the perfect security of liberty is dispensable. He's actually talking, and I can give you a great common or a modern day example of people that are talking about making changes with hypothesis, opinion, and perpetual change. And that is the folks that are actually calling for an Article 5 convention. They have no real tangible solutions. They've just got these, we want to just talk about these issues. Instead of saying, here is a deficiency and here is the fix for the deficiency. Because that's what Madison did. That's how he amended the Constitution. Why wouldn't we follow the father of the Constitution's example by saying, instead of leading with discussion, how about leading with, you know, identifying the deficiencies and tell us what this, what you suggest, instead of being nefarious and hiding that. Anyway, I can see that we're heading into a quick set of promos. So we'll finish this part of paragraph 19 and dive more into parties as soon as we come back from these upcoming promos. So I hope you're enjoying this, and I hope you're actually finding, you know, the insightfulness of George Washington. And, you know, he may not have been the brightest bulb out of the framers, but this man was as smart as a tack. And I'm telling you, he was sharp as a tack. And there's no doubt in my mind, he understood what the heck was going on, but he did not play like, oh, he was, you know, the all-knowing Oz like Hamilton portrayed himself. We'll be right back. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So clearly, in paragraph 19, Washington is warning us of those people who want to just change based on hypothesis. He says, you know, it requires experience and good understanding to make good, effective changes, is basically what he's saying here. And he goes on and wraps up this paragraph with this. Liberty itself will find in such a government with powers properly distributed and adjusted is its surest guardian. It is indeed little else than a name where the government is too feeble to withstand the enterprises of faction, to confine each member of society within the limits prescribed by the laws and to maintain all in the secure and tranquil enjoyment of the rights of person and property. Wow. Just to think, our government was designed to, you know, secure the tranquil enjoyment of your rights of person and property. Amazing. And he got it. He understood. Wow. Hit it out of the park with that. Okay, so paragraph 20 gets back into parties here. And he says, I have already intimated to you the dangers of parties in the state, with particular reference to the founding of them on geographical discriminations. Let me now take a more comprehensive view and warn you in the most solemn manner against the baneful effects of the spirit of party generally. This spirit, unfortunately, is inseparable from our nature, having its roots in the strongest passions of the human mind. In other words, what he's talking about is LGBTQ or homosexuality, your sexual perversion, sexualizing society. People that are so fixated on sexualizing society and debasing the mores of our culture are far more insidious and have, I hate to say this, folks, you know, it's one thing to be secure in your person, in your property, but to make our society so debased that we focus on sexuality, we are in a downward spiral, because now it's about self-gratification instead of discipline and enlightenment in trying to lift society to putting, you know, behind us our carnal nature and moving towards a greater actualization, realization of our mental capacities and potential. Moving on, in paragraph 22, the alternate denomination, or excuse me, because he's continuing on in party here, the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries have perpetuated the most horrid enormities, is itself frightful despotism. But this leads at length to a more formal and permanent despotism. The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, and sooner or later the chief of some prevailing faction, more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns his disposition on the purposes of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. They saw this, and Washington was actually witnessing this just across the Atlantic in France with the French Revolution. He saw Napoleon coming to power and how Napoleon literally undermined the communist revolution that was coming out of the communes and seized it for his own self-aggrandizement. It was supposed to be the first, and it was a failed revolution, but it was supposed to be the first communist revolution where a country actually became communal and a status type of government, godless and so forth. And so anyway, Washington was well aware of what the heck was going on over there. Paragraph 23. Without looking forward to an extremity of this kind, which nevertheless ought not to be entirely out of sight, the common and continual mischiefs of the spirit of party are sufficient to make the interest and duty of a wise people to discourage and restrain it. We should not be allowing factions that come in because they have money, like the log cabin Republicans, or anybody using their lucre to get us to compromise principles. If our focus is compliance to the Constitution, these factions melt away, whether it be factions on whatever demographics you want to bring forth, whether it be gender or the fluidity of gender, whether it be race, whether it be anything. When we focus on individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and compliance to the Constitution, all these things go away. And that's where we need to be as an enlightened society in the 21st, moving to the 22nd century. Okay? It serves, and this is paragraph 24, it serves always to distract the public councils and enfeeble the public administration. It agitates the community with ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, kindles the animosity of one part against another, foments occasionally riot and insurrection. It opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which finds a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and will of another. I will give you something even more insidious than another nation, and that is those elitist globalists like Soros and the rest of them. They come in and influence and corrupt even worse because they have a very insidious agenda that they are pushing forward. Moving on to paragraph 29. There is no opinion that parties in free countries are useful checks upon the administration of the government and serve to keep alive the spirit of liberty. This, within certain limits, is probably true, and in governments of monarchical caste, patriotism may look with indulgence, if not with favor, upon the spirit of party. But in those of popular character in governments purely elective, it is a spirit not to be encouraged. From their natural tendencies, it is certain there will always be enough of that spirit for every salutary purpose, and there being constant danger of excess, the effort ought to be by force of public opinion to migrate to assuage it. A fire not to be quenched, it demands a uniform vigilance to prevent its bursting into flame, lest instead of warming, it should consume. And so he's putting it out there, and he's showing just how selfish, just how driven these party proponents, these factions, don't even put them in. You got to understand that a party is a faction, but if you look at the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, they are a big tent faction. In other words, they have lots of little tents within them. They have the women's movement, both of them, and they have different issues that they are propping up inside these small factions. And everybody comes up and goes, no, it's my grapefruit that's more important. Look at this one. This is golden. And the other one says, no, this is pink. Bottom line, all they're doing is they're trying to self-aggrandize, and they're trying to, the intent is to marginalize and subjugate the principles of individual liberty, the principles of this nation. And actually, like he says here, and it will consume this nation if we let it, right? Okay, so he moves on into paragraph 26, and this is where he starts talking about the Constitution again and amending it. And he says, and by the way, we're on page 6 of 11, right? So we're a little past halfway. And paragraph 26, he basically says, it is important likewise that the habits of thinking in a free country should inspire caution in those entrusted with its administration to confine themselves within the respective constitutional spheres, avoiding in the experience of the powers of one department to encroach upon another. The spirit of encroachment tends to consolidate the powers of all the departments in one, and thus to create whatever the form of government, a real despotism. a just estimate of that love of power and proneness to abuse it, which predominates in the human heart, is sufficient to satisfy us the truth of this position. The necessity of reciprocal checks in the exercise of political power by dividing and distributing it into different depositories and constituting each the guardian of the public weal against invasions or invasions by the others has been evinced by experiments, ancient and modern, some of them in our country and under our own eyes. To preserve them, and oops, well, we're at a hard break. So we're going to finish this we'll take it back up to preserve them when we come back after these two promos. So stay tuned, folks. We've got plenty more of Washington's insights regarding his farewell address coming up. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let me just kind of take back or get back to where I was. And so, excuse me. So where we are is to preserve them. Right? We were just walking out on going into the promo, talking about preserving. To preserve this government, to preserve these principles, to preserve them must be as necessary as to institute them. If, in the opinion of the people, the distribution or modification of the constitutional powers be in particular wrong, let it be corrected by amendment in the way which the Constitution designates. And here is the most important message out of all the episodes and out of every word that I have read from George Washington's hand right here, or Madison's hand. This is the most important. So pay note. But let there be no change by usurpation. In other words, do not let the federal government just assume they can do these things. The only process for the changing of anything that the federal government can do is via the Article 5 amendment process. So let there be no change by usurpation. For through this, he's warning us what happens if we allow them to do this. For through this, in one instance, may be the instrument of good. It is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. The precedent must always greatly overbalance in permanent evil any partial or transient benefit which the use can at any time yield. In other words, it is best to create a permanent change than a temporary, just for a benefit. Well, we're just going to do this for this one point in time. And next thing you know, the Environmental Protection Agency becomes a permanent fixture in our government and in our lives. Now, he goes on now and gets into religion a little bit more. And he says, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would the man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness. In other words, how can somebody claim to be a patriot if they're trying to subvert the pillars of human happiness, such as religion and morality? These firmest props of the duties of men and citizens, the mere politician equally with the pious man, ought to respect and to cherish them. A volume could not trace all their connections with private and public felicity. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for property, for reputation, honor, right? For reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation desert the oaths which are the instruments of investigation in courts of justice. Folks, this is why we have to go to pledges of resignation, because oaths mean nothing anymore. You can't take a person to court because they violated their oath. It means nothing. It's the same thing with your oath of a wedding ceremony. Do you, you know, take this woman and take this man and blah, blah, blah. And when all of a sudden they violate that oath of their wedding vows, well, what happens? Nothing. They just get divorced. There's no consequence for the sin or the wrongdoing. And let us, moving on, he says, and let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. In other words, don't even think, don't allow them to soothsay you and lie and get you to believe that morality can be maintained without religion. You know, they've been doing this for millennia. As a matter of fact, they did it in ancient Greece. They did it in modern times as well. And there's a bunch of historical evidence that proves they've always tried to move away from, you know, saying that they can, or actually allowing them to claim that they can maintain morality without religion. As a matter of fact, that's what the corporate world is trying to do today by saying, well, we have these ethics, but you cannot maintain your morality without religion. And our ethics will maintain all of that. No, I'm sorry. What they have to do is they have to create their own secular form of religion to make it somehow wrong. And still there are compromises. And he says, and let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds of peculiar structure, reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. And I will give you a perfect example. How can we think that we are a moral nation anymore when we see witness to these horrific crimes and these atrocities being put upon our fellow man? When students are shooting other students, there are consequences for removing morality and religion from our culture. And we are reaping this. When we stopped having prayer in schools, when we went away from the Bible, because as he pointed out, we were of one particular religion or a faith. We were a Christian nation. It's pretty clear and simple, folks. Getting back to our fundamental principles is our only way back. But the only way we can do this, because I've got a lot of very religious people that come to me and say, you know, we got to do this first. No, what we have to do so that your ministers, so that you way leaders can actually have an opportunity of spiritually healing this nation, you have to get out and get supporting the concept of compliance. Once the federal government begins complying, then you are now free to start helping the healing of this nation move forward, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Because bottom line, you can't get there without compliance. The only reason, the primary reason why we've become a godless secular nation is because they have violated and no longer in compliance with the Constitution. They can't make any laws regarding religion, period. They have zero jurisdiction over it. And I've gone through this with the Bill of Rights. If you read the first amendment, the federal government can make no law or infringe upon your rights of religious expression, period. So, going into paragraph 28, it is substantially true that the virtue or morality is a necessary spring of popular government. The rule indeed extends with more or less force to every species of free government, who that is a sincere friend to it can look with indifference upon attempts to shake the foundation of the fabric. And he's talking about the fabric of society. 29. Promote then, as an object of primary importance, institutions for the general diffusion of knowledge, in proportion as the structure of government gives force to public opinion. It is essential that public opinion should be enlightened. Haven't I been saying this? Instead of allowing ourselves to chase the carnal desires and the immediate gratifications of the moment, we must be enlightened. And discipline is a fundamental tenet of enlightenment. As a very important source of strength and security, cherish public credit. One method of preserving it is to use it as sparingly as possible, avoiding occasions of expense by cultivating peace, but remembering also that timely disbursements to prepare for danger frequently prevent much greater disbursements to repel it. In other words, always being prepared and having a good national security and national defenses and so forth. Avoiding likewise the accumulation of debt, not only by shunning occasions of expense, but by vigorous exertion in time of peace to discharge the debts which unavoidably wars may have occasioned, not ungenerously throwing upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. The execution of these maxims belong to your representatives, but it is necessary the public opinion should cooperate. To facilitate to them the performance of their duty, it is essential that you should particularly bear in mind that towards the payment of debts, there must be revenue, that to have revenue, there must be taxes, that no taxes can be devised which are not more or less inconvenient and unpleasant, that the intrinsic embarrassment inseparable from the selection of the proper objects, which is always a choice of difficulties, ought to be a divisive motive for a candid construction of the conduct of government in making it for a spirit of acquiescence in the measures for obtaining revenue which the public exigencies may at times dictate. Perfect time to end that paragraph. So we're going into paragraph 31 next. So we will be right back, and I'll make some comments regarding debt when we come back. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
All right, so we're now on paragraph 31, and people are going, wow, how many paragraphs are there? Well, just here's where we are in progress, right, regarding the farewell address. Like I said before, there are 11 pages. We're on page 8 of 11, so we're winding it down. To answer the question regarding how many paragraphs there are, what I have done is I've gone through and numbered every one of the paragraphs in the George Washington Farewell Address. So, 51. Just to answer your question, we got 20 more paragraphs to go through. But if you haven't already realized just how important these words are, I hope you have by now, because he is hitting every basis of the threats that we face as our constitutional republic. Now, he goes on here and he says, observe good faith and justice towards all nations. Cultivate peace and harmony with all. Religion and morality enjoin this conduct. And can it be that good policy does not equal enjoining it? It will be worthy of a free, enlightened, and at no distant period, a great nation to give to mankind the magnanimous and to novel people of a magnanimous to novel example of a people always guided by an exalted justice and benevolence. Who can doubt that in the course of time and things, the fruits of such plan would richly repay and temporary advantages which might be lost by a steady adherence to it? Can it be that Providence, the good Lord, has not connected the permanent felicity of a nation with its virtue? The experiment, at least, is recommended by every sentiment which ennobles human nature. Alas, is it rendered impossible by its vices? In the execution of such a plan, this is paragraph 32, Nothing is more essential than that permanent inveterate antipathies against particular nations and passionate attachments for others. In other words, right here he's talking about the Anglophile hate towards Britain and the hate towards, because the people were already being divided. Thomas Jefferson and those, you know, who loved the French, you know, were just blinded towards what was going on in France. And it was the same thing with the Anglophiles who loved Britain and so forth. And he's just pointing out that there is nothing more essential than the permanent inveterate antipathies against particular nations and passionate attachments for others should be excluded, and that in place of them, just and amicable feelings towards all should be cultivated. The nation which indulges towards another a habitual hatred or habitual fondness is in some degree a slave. It is a slave to its animosity or to its affection, either of which is sufficient to lead it astray from its duty and its interest. Antipathy in one nation against another disposes each more readily to offer insult and injury, to lay hold of slight causes of umbrage, and to be haughty and intractable when accidental or trifling occasions of dispute occur. Hence, frequent collisions, obstinate, envenomed, and bloody contests. The nation prompted by ill will and resentment sometimes impels to war the government contrary to the best calculations of policy. The government sometimes participates in the national propensity and adopts through passion what reason would reject, and other times it makes the animosity of the nation subservient to projects of hostility instigated by pride, ambition, and other sinister and pernicious motives. The peace, often sometimes perhaps the liberty of nations, has been the victim. Number 33. So likewise, a passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils, sympathy for the favorite nation facilitating the illusion of imaginary common interests in cases where no real common interest exists. My friends, this is exactly what's happened when we gave China its most favored nation status by Nixon and has been carried forward to this day. And infusing into one the enmities of the other betrays the former into a participation in the quarrels and wars of the latter without adequate inducement or justification. It leads also to concessions to the favorite nation of privileges denied to others, which is apt doubly to injure the nation making the concessions by unnecessarily parting with what ought to have been retained, and by exciting jealousy, ill will, and a disposition to retaliate in the parties from whom equal privilege are withheld. And it gives to ambitious, corrupted, and deluded citizens who devote themselves to the favorite nation facility to betray or sacrifice the interests of their own country without odium, sometimes even with popularity, gilding with the appearance of a virtuous sense of obligation, a commendable difference for public opinion, or a laudable zeal for public good, the base or foolish compliances of ambition, corruption, or infatuation. You know what? The way he lays this out here, this is precisely how we should be executing our foreign affairs. We are way too entangled with way too many. And as a matter of fact, I've said this before, we should be the champions of liberty to the world, and we should be basically telling every state, you let us know if you want to become a part of this nation by applying to become a state. Take it to your people, and if your people want to become a state of the United States, then we will tell you what you would have to do to come to become a state. Now, don't forget that in the past, Christianity was a part of that requirement. That's right. Okay? So as we go into paragraph 34, he says this, as avenues to foreign influence are innumerable ways, such attachments are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions, to practice the arts of seduction, to mislead public opinion, to influence or awe the public councils? Such an attachment of a small or weak towards a great and powerful nation dooms the former to be the satellite of the latter. Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, I conjure you to believe me, fellow citizens, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of a republican government. But that jealousy, to be useful, must be impartial, else it becomes the instrument of the very influence to be avoided, instead of a defense against it. Excessive partiality for one foreign nation and excessive dislike for another cause those whom they actuate to see danger only on one side and serve the veil and even second the arts of influence on the other. Real patriots who may resist the intrigues of the favorite or liable to become suspected and odious, while its tools and dupes usurp the applause and confidence of the people to surrender their interests. So we're at this point where we're going to go into a paragraph that's a little bit longer, but I'm going to try to rush through it, so forgive me. The great rule of conduct for us is to regard to foreign nations is in extending our commercial relations to have with them as little political connection as possible. So far as we have already formed engagements, let them be fulfilled with perfect good faith. Here, let us stop. Europe has set a primary interest which to us have none or a very remote relation. Hence, she must be engaged in frequent controversies, the causes of which are essentially foreign to our concerns. Hence, therefore, it must be unwise in us to implicate ourselves by artificial ties to the ordinary vicissitudes of her policies or the ordinary combinations of collisions of her friendship or enmities. And with that, there's no way I have time to go through the next one. So I hope I didn't rush through that too much. But as you can see, he is giving us literally a fundamental course on the best way to have intercourse and foreign policies and relationships with foreign nations that would more than likely be jealous of the liberties that we enjoy here. And he actually goes through this as we proceed forward, but that'll be in our next episode. We will be probably wrapping this up in our next episode, so you won't want to miss this. And I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.